evening, everyone. I'm Lenor Moudou. Welcome to Health Chat. Today we start with some news from West Africa, Mali precisely, where villages in the Mondoro area of the Mopti region are battling a mysterious disease that is proving to be deadly. Inhabitants who have contracted the illness are isolated in a small area without access to adequate medical attention, causing an environment highly susceptible to the spread of disease. According to Doctors Without Borders and local officials, over 200 cases have been identified in the villages of Duna, Tigila, and Nagasaju. Efforts are now underway to provide services and contain the disease. Joining us in the studio for more is VOA Bambara reporter Modibo Dambele. Modibo, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Lenor.
So, listen, what is happening with this outbreak? We hear about a mysterious illness. Some people even were worried about, they were saying symptoms look like the plague, but of course, there is really nothing concrete that we are hearing. What can you tell us?
Thank you very much again. And I got a chance to talk to one of the health local health officials from Duanza. His name is Dr. Seydou Kante. According to him, insecurity is one of the main reasons why area from Duna, Nyagashaju, and Tigila are not able to get the proper food that they were getting. Why? Because I don't know if you are familiar with it. Right now in the middle of Mali, especially Mopti and in the extreme north, there is a huge insecurity due to the jihadists.
Yes.
And also some ethnic group violence between Fulani, Bozo, Bambara, and landmine. And then the population is no longer able to get the food they were getting through the road.
Mm-hmm.
So, therefore, it caused a food shortage. And as a result, malnutrition. So, making statement that it could be mysterious disease. Local official, that's what they told us. How they found it? Last Sunday, they made a visit to Mondoro, and I got a chance even to talk also to the mayor. Maybe we can discuss that later
yes.
on.
Mm-hmm.
And they confirmed there's no such kind of
mysterious
disease.
Illness. So basically,
people are hungry.
Okay, so basically you are saying that this so-called mysterious disease is malnutrition.
Yes,
that's what they're saying.
Yes, malnutrition, yes. That's what they say.
Do you know if they are still looking into other possible sicknesses, or for now they are focusing on that malnutrition?
According to Dr. Kante, when they get on the ground, and we have even the World Health Organization, some people from there, and also Mali Health Ministry officials, so it is not only two people. They went over there with an investigative unit.
Mm-hmm.
And based on the investigation, they find out that people, I think they reported 204 people,
yes.
cases, they have been affected. And also 35 people are dead, and 53 were hospitalized. And symptoms are like loss of weight and also impairment, and sometimes people cannot walk. Because when you are eating properly, of course, you're going to get sick because
yes.
you may look like somebody who's having some kind of another disease, but based on them, there is not such kind of things which is happening in Mondoro.
Okay. So tell us, how long has this been going on? Because this is not just something that happened yesterday or last week. It seems like it's been a couple of months, right?
Yes. This has been going on, according to local health official, almost 2 months. And the problem, or maybe the strange things, the population also was worried. They didn't know exactly why people were dying quickly, you know. And but when health official went over there after all those one-on-one interview and the cases, so they find out that people are not getting the food. Because if you try, for instance, on January 25th, I don't know if you remember, a UN unit in Mali, I think, the car exploded. 26 mm-hmm. people died.
Died, yes.
We have Malian people from all Burkina Faso. According to Kante, since January 25th, no car was able to bring food in Mondoro.
Oh,
and
wow.
right now, we are in which month? That has been many months.
Yes.
And so the
yes.
food that those people were able to secure,
yes.
so after those food were finished, so it caused a shortage. And as a result, and the population was thinking maybe at the beginning that it was a disease. But when they came after all the medical investigation, they mm-hmm. can confirm, according to him, it's just malnutrition.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. And it goes to show how deadly malnutrition is. I mean, it's not something to be taken lightly. Histories have shown that malnutrition is it's really a serious occurrence, and that needs to be taken seriously. And one of the issues, and I mentioned that in my introduction, is that region is landlocked. It's really hard to access.
Yes, Mali itself is a landlocked, and Mopti is a landlocked. But right now, what makes it very difficult for people to bring food, that's insecurity, as I told you, because in Mopti area, Amadou Koufa, I don't know if you are familiar with that name, is a leader of the terrorists in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
And they put landmines, so it's almost impossible to use the road to bring food. And right now, the government, only with its local and international partner, all they are doing, according to Kanti, they use airways. For instance, they use a helicopter to bring food, because if you are trying to bring it, you're gonna die.
Yeah.
Or your car might explode. And the mayor, his name is Monsieur Abdurrahman El Hadji, he confirmed that exactly the government and his partner were able to bring food. And
And interesting, you talked to the mayor, El Hajj. What else did he say about this whole situation?
He confirmed the same thing. He said people are hungry when you are getting food, so you might look like somebody who's sick, because the stomach is not getting what it's supposed to get at the right time.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
therefore, people, it's, according to him, many people die, And they say 35. And Dr. Kanti specified that they didn't eyewitness those people we have been reported as dead. But mm-hmm. they told them that 35 people died. But so far, 53 were hospitalized. And now they count 204 people who have been affected by these malnutrition.
So it's interesting that they did not necessarily witness the people who died. They're saying they're estimating the death toll at 35, which means it could be less or it could be even more.
According to him, the 35 cases have been reported by the populations.
Okay.
But they have not eyewitnessed those things. And he really emphasized on this one, which means it might be less or it might be more. But the good news, at least, is right now the government is really trying to do what it can.
And yeah, tell us about that. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. One thing I just forget to mention earlier when we're doing the TV part, the mayor really raised, again, some very interesting issues.
Mm-hmm.
The government say they are ready to do whatever it takes to solve this issue. Unfortunately, they cannot use the road because of the insecurity, even the army. So if you try to bring food through road, you might be facing landline, or you might be even attacked by those terrorists.
Yeah.
So right now, it's happy at least they are using the air. And according to him, how long this is going to last?
Mm-hmm.
So that's a question mark.
How long they will be able to deliver the food?
Yes, because that's why it's the best way to him, if they can really send the army in those areas so they can really secure. Because Monduru has 4 health districts, and right now 3 are really affected. And as I said earlier, we have Duna, Nyagasaju, and Tigila are the villages where really we have many people who are suffering from these issues. And according to him, it will be much better if they can really secure those areas by sending those security forces. And unfortunately, as I say again, we have landmine.
Yeah.
So it's kind of like a dilemma.
That's a tough one. So I know you mentioned some of the things that are being done. You talked to the mayor, you talked to the chief of the district health unit. So what are the steps? They're delivering food via air. What else are they doing? What are the prospects in terms of containing this disease? Are they optimistic?
According to him, and I spoke also to the health unit of Mopti,
mm-hmm.
and Duanzan is part of the district health of Mopti. According to him, his name is Dr. Koulibaly. Right now, especially Mali international partner are really providing financial and material help to provide more food, because according to them, we don't have such kind of disease that is really affecting people.
Okay.
So they are trying to see how they can really get more food. For instance, you see they are providing millet, they are providing oil, they are providing sugar, those daily basic necessities that okay. people need to feed themselves. And the first day I have done the interview, I think the plane arrived around like noon, and another one was supposed to come at 4 p.m. So do you think that it's going to be able to feed like three villages?
Mm.
That's the question. Maybe they might need more quantities.
Mm-hmm.
And so the later development can tell us if they are really able to do that or not.
Okay, and we'll definitely keep an eye on it. And you talked about international partners, such as we know that Doctors Without Borders is on the ground, and there are other partners as well. And Modibo, thank you so much. Anything else you'd like to add before we let you go?
Thank you very much.
Thank you so much for joining us. Thank you for keeping us abreast of what's going on. And we look forward for more updates.
My pleasure.
And more of your reporting. Thanks for your great reporting. Modibo Nabele, we appreciate your time. And that was a VOA reporter from the Bambara Service, Modibo Nabele. You are listening to Health Chat. We are going to take a short break and we'll be right back for more. That was Olivia Mtukudzi. You were listening to the Zimbabwe singer, famous singer, Olivia Mtukudzi. I am Lenore Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. And it is now time for the news with Ruth Adisu.
Good evening. A new study published in the Lancet Psychiatric Journal says regular physical activity lasting 45 minutes, 3 to 5 times a week can reduce poor mental health, but doing more than that is not also beneficial. Adults taking part in the study say that they experience average 3.4 days of poor mental health each month. For those who were physically active, this reduced to only 2 days. All types of activity were found to improve mental health no matter what people's age, gender, including the housework and looking after children, a total of 1.2 million people reported their activity levels for a month and rated their mental well-being. A recently released report reveals that 3 in 4 young adults experienced some form of violence during their childhood, according to their first ever Ugandan Violence Against Children survey. Among the findings, the survey highlights that violence against children occurs at all levels of society, such as homes, schools, and communities. Survivors suffer negative physical, mental, and social cognitive consequences. Uganda is the latest among several countries worldwide that have conducted similar violence against children surveys. The Ugandan survey was conducted by its Ministry of Gender, Labor, and Social Development, with support from partners such as Africa Child Center for Excellence, the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, and UNICEF. And that's a wrap-up of your latest health news.
And thank you, Ruth, for the news. So listen to this. Experts say vaccine is an effective way to prevent many diseases in children as well as adults. But many children around the world do not have access to the vaccines they need. I spoke recently to Dr. Orin Levin. He is the director of vaccine delivery at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We talked about many aspects of vaccine coverage and vaccine delivery, especially vaccine coverage across Africa and how better data through innovations can help protect more children. Take a listen. Dr. Orin Levin, thank you so much for joining us here at the Voice of America.
It's my pleasure.
You are the Director of Vaccines Delivery at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. First and foremost, can you give us a sense of what your work entails?
Sure. At the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, we have a very simple motto or vision that really drives us, which is that all lives have equal value. Knowing how important vaccines are for protecting women and children, we believe strongly that everyone deserves the right to those life-saving vaccines. And so our vaccine delivery program is focused on trying to make sure that those vaccines that can improve people's lives and protect people from serious illness are made available to everyone everywhere.
Vaccine is such a basic, it's such a basic step in public health. When we think about vaccine, it's been there for quite a long time. But yet there are still some communities, regions, people, countries that do not have access to some basic vaccines. So tell us today your approach, your opinion on how the world is doing with regards to vaccine coverage, especially in developing countries. When we look at the Sustainable Development Goals and where we are now, what is your take?
Sure. So I think global vaccination is generally a really, really great story of success. It demonstrates how with a collective effort, with a partnership of public and private sector, governments and philanthropy, international institutions, we can make incredible strides. If you look at Africa, for example, there are so many shining examples of African-led success with immunization. Smallpox no longer exists in Africa. Polio is gone. Epidemic meningitis is nearly gone. And measles deaths are 80% lower than historical levels. All of those successes in Africa, driven by Africans using immunizations to reach every child and every woman who needs them everywhere.
Mm-hmm. Now, tell us more about the value of vaccine. Yes, we understand that vaccination is very important, but if you can take us back to the fundamentals of why it's important to get vaccinated.
Sure. Well, you know, I think for me there's both a head and a heart answer to this. The answer from my brain is, if I look at the rational payout, if you will, the advantages of vaccinating people, they're incredible. We estimate that the economic return on vaccinations in developing countries is about $44 for every single dollar invested. So just an incredible rational argument for it. But as a parent of two daughters, there's also a heart issue. I want to do everything I can as a parent to make sure that they never suffer needlessly. And so the idea that with just a couple of contacts with the health system, with just a couple of jabs in their arm, I can protect them against deadly diseases that could otherwise make them ill or even kill them, it is the kind of compelling reason for me as a parent to make sure that immunizations are complete for all my kids.
Mm-hmm. Yet there are, as I mentioned earlier again, some communities that don't have access to basic vaccine. What are some of the barriers to vaccination, especially when we look at the continent of Africa? What can you tell us about some of the main factors that hinder access to vaccination for children and people who need it?
I'm glad you're asking about this, because I do think that for all the good news about immunizations and what we have accomplished, we still also have to be very, very sober in looking at what the situation looks like for everyone. And there are still large areas of inequity, large areas where the immunization coverage is not reaching the high levels that we see across the world. And there are a number of different barriers that contribute to that. The single most important is conflict. Wherever there is conflict, it just makes it hard for health workers to reach communities and for communities to access the systems that deliver vaccine. In addition, we have learned that in communities where they may be remote or harder to reach, where there may be historical, underinvestment in health systems in general and the infrastructure in general, those contribute to under-immunization. And then importantly, I think there's a demand side to this, that good immunization coverage also works best when communities understand the value of immunizing their children and their families, and actively seek out immunizations as well. So to some degree, each of those different barriers exist in different parts of the world. And at least for our part, we're not done. We're not declaring victory until we've got every kid everywhere reached with the full set of immunizations.
Now, there's the sense that the fact that data plays an important role in vaccine coverage to help protect more children. Can you explain to us the importance of data, but more importantly, reliable data in vaccine coverage to protect more children?
Yeah, I'm thrilled that you're asking this question, because maybe not surprisingly, at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation, our focus is very much on data and results. We're a results-driven organization, probably born out of the foundation's co-chairs themselves. What typically, at the most basic level, immunization programs struggle with is, first of all, knowing every kid that they need to reach. So making sure that no one is left out. And then, because you need multiple immunizations to finish your series, in other words, you're not completely protected until you reach two or three different injections of the vaccines, they need to avoid kids getting into the program and then dropping out. Mm-hmm. So basically, in immunizations, we talk about two kinds of problems: left outs and dropouts. Data can help you with avoiding left outs if it can help you to visualize where the children are that you need to serve, right? Mm-hmm. Help healthcare workers to say, this child was born, but I haven't yet seen them for their routine vaccinations. Registering children and the like. It can also help with dropouts. If we know that a child got in for their first immunization, how do we make sure that they complete the immunization series? So if you take a country like Cote d'Ivoire, for example, they have a very strong program in reaching everyone at least once. About 99% of children in Cote d'Ivoire are estimated to have at least one immunization visit. But about 15% of those kids who start don't complete the immunization series. So one way data could help is by empowering health workers to keep track of the kids who got in the system and were dropping out, or by having parents reminded, my child is due for their next immunization, and bringing them back in.
This is a good point that you're making. When you take the example of Cote d'Ivoire and speaking about left out and drop out, because I remember when I saw this data, I was like, are you sure? Cote d'Ivoire is kind of advanced when it comes to immunization. But then the dropout rate is where the problem is, at least, you know. And I think a lot of times we tend to to oversee that when we talk about vaccination. Yes, children should be vaccinated once, but then what happened after that? And it's a very, very, very interesting that, I mean, this is a clear example of how dropout also is a critical, critical problem that needs to be addressed, very, very, very much so. So did you have anything to add with regards to dropouts and how we retain them, not only with data, but perhaps other interventions?
So the dropout problem is one where data can really help us, because if you got into the system once, then your name, your cell phone number, your address, something that tells us how to reach you or find you, should be in our data system. Mm-hmm. What I think is really exciting about where things are going in Africa right now is that data is increasingly moving off of paper and into electronic or digital systems. Mm-hmm. That allows health workers really rapid access to the data. It allows health workers to be able to plan their next day's work in order to make sure that they find a child who may be late for an immunization session and make sure that she gets caught up and she gets the complete set of immunizations. So it's the use of data and, in some ways, the advantages that digital platforms are increasingly providing in Africa to do that, that I think has a lot of people really excited about what's possible for African immunization.
And in that regard, in terms of... And that was Dr. Orin Levine. He is Director of Vaccines Delivery at the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. We thank him for giving us time to talk to him about such an important topic, which is vaccination, immunization for children. We also thank our colleague who came in the studio to give us an update on the illness that is affecting people in Mali. He is Modibo Dambele from the Bambara service. We thank him for joining us. And thanks to all of you, our listeners, for joining us, who are listening in Africa and around the world via the net. We appreciate your time. If you'd like to stay in touch, let's keep the conversation going on our Facebook page, facebook.com/ VOA Health Chat. I know the address. I am your host, Lenore Mudu in Washington, with producer Jackson Vungani, Ruth Adisu with the news, and associate producer Thomas, engineer John. Thank you to all of you. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.
This is VOA.